Welcome to the Colors of InfoSec podcast, a podcast demystifying what it means to navigate a career in information security and technology as people of color. I'm your host, Asif Ahmad.
And I am Christina Murillo.
And we're here to give you an all-access pass into tech and InfoSec's past, present, and future.
Welcome to episode 4. Today, we're going to do it a little bit different. We wanted to really give you insight into what our typical conversations look like. So we're going to keep it a little bit unstructured, but we promise to have some fun and keep the conversation interesting. So over the weekend, I decided to Netflix and chill in a positive way. And I kept hearing about this documentary called The Social Dilemma. And I was super, super curious about what it entailed. So I made sure the kids were quiet, and I started watching the documentary. It was fascinating. Asif, I know that you also watched it as well. So, looking forward to just having this like really honest conversation about everything we learned.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I sat down and I decided to watch it as well. The delivery, what they were showing, the amount that the intent behind it, and also just how, you know, I feel like the value of human intelligence and the value of the human experience is being hijacked by a lot of these organizations. So it was a very eye-opening, but at the same time, it was also somewhat disappointing too, to see it presented like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so like for those who may not have watched it, we don't want to give too many giveaways. But first of all, if you have not seen The Social Dilemma on Netflix, then I recommend you stop playing this episode right now, go watch it and then come back, because we don't want to give away any spoilers, right? And we'll try not to. But pretty much The Social Dilemma highlights, you know, the problem with social media and just kind of how these social media companies or technology companies are leveraging things like persuasive technology, growth hacking to, you know, make money, right? Like, we're going to keep it super simple. And so just to go back, as of like, I don't know, for folks that may not know, like, can you tell like our audience like what persuasive technology is?
If you have like email, or you have, for instance, an app like Facebook or Instagram, the way it's designed, the way the look and feel of the buttons, the when you get notified by like Gmail that you have an email, or you get notified by like Outlook with a sound like the wind chimes, those are all things that are built on persuasive technology. So what it's designed to do is supposed to give you a friendly look and feel, and give you like bring your guards down and give you that comfort that you could actually go and look at this and look at it for hours. So it's supposed to persuade you not only to click on it, but to also feel a level of comfort. Think of it as a baby with a pacifier. That would be a good analogy, right? Like you have a child, they cry. So you give them something to kind of give them some type of comfort or some type of soothing. That's the whole mindset behind persuasive technology, right? It's designed to be like that digital pacifier for you. You're having a day where you're at work or you're bored. You're going to look at that phone or you're going to look at that device to give you some type of comfort, right? So that's the design. That's the intent behind it. There's actually schools of technology that prescribe to this, which I didn't even know about this. But that's pretty much the mindset behind persuasive technology.
Yeah, the way that I understand it, it really is designed to like change attitudes and behaviors through like these persuasive kind of controls or social influence, right? For me, like Twitter is my social media platform of choice, right? I've been on Twitter for many, many years, and I engage with a lot of people. And I think that based on the way that the platform was developed, and this applies to any social media platform, obviously, there is an element of addiction, right? First of all, with the smartphone, having a mini computer in your pocket 24 hours a day, and having these quick applications that you can, you know, simply click on and get, you know, feel that comfort or feel like you're connected to someone, is addicting, right? And so like the persuasive technology discipline really explores that and exploits that, right? You know, we're in security and technology, we like to talk about like exploiting vulnerabilities. Well, you know, think of it as like a way to exploit the human mind, right? Or just different strategies. Another point that they brought up was this whole concept of like growth hacking, which really falls under like the, they're calling them like growth marketers, right? Or marketing kind of discipline, right? And it's just pretty much at the end of the day, it's just really like strategies to help businesses acquire and retain more customers, right? So I don't know. I was really fascinated. I feel like I need to watch that documentary a couple more times just to really like absorb everything, all of the lessons. But I just feel like it just really validates the fact that attention is in high demand right now, but in short supply, right? Like everyone wants everyone else's eyes on their content, on, you know, I mean, even us, right? We'd love for folks to listen to the podcast, right? But it's not really because we want to sell ads or sell anything. We're not selling anything. We just really want to share our learnings, right, over the years. But I feel like in the age of social media, it's all about sales, right? Because if we're not paying to use any of these platforms, right? And so if we're not paying for it, then how are organizations making money, right? They always say that if you don't pay for the product, you are the product. And so I think this documentary really explored that deeply, which...
Yeah, I agree. I think that it really highlighted that, which I found, you know, really eye-opening because, for instance, you're talking about growth hacking. They're saying that what these applications are doing, for instance, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, TikTok, what they're all doing is they're trying to make all this content to keep you engaged. Right. So the longer you're engaged, the longer you're keeping your eyes on this content and like the computer for your attention.
But why do they want to keep you engaged? Right?
They want to keep you engaged so they can slip ads in there. So by them finding out your behaviors and finding out your structure of your day, like for instance, if every day at 4 o'clock, because you know humans, we're like creatures of habit. Let's be honest, a majority of us are, right? And they're trying to say, if I can figure out these habits, figure out that you like to go to this site, figure out that you like to talk to your family on WhatsApp for this amount of time, they start learning those behaviors. They can put more content based on the analysis of your day. They can put more content that is more friendly to you, is more appeasing to you by using the persuasive technology. You use that to market. And that's the growth hacking right there, because it allows them to grow the ad space, allows them to charge the ad. Like, for instance, if you're constantly looking at sports and they see, okay, he likes basketball, he likes football, he or she likes, you know, a certain type of makeup, he or she likes a certain type of brand of jeans or sneakers. While you're talking to your family or you're looking at your family's Instagram feed, all of a sudden you'll see like a sneaker ad pop in there somehow. And you start wondering, how did they know I like those sneakers? Well, this is what this documentary breaks down. It breaks down the science behind that and how the algorithms and the AI can provide that intelligence so you can stay tuned into their content more.
Yeah, no, it's I found it surprising that like there's just, you know, I've heard of people talking about like, you know, technology ethics and kind of the principles to govern technology, right? Especially technology that can really impact humans. And I feel like we have little to no tech ethics, but so much technology that has already impacted humans, right? I mean, to me, that's scary, right? That we have become addicted under almost like false pretenses, right? That these companies have really exploited parts of our brains that we didn't even know existed or that we weren't aware of for their own benefit. And I feel like there's no control. There's no source of truth. There's no one source of truth, which was another topic that they discussed in the documentary. And what I found interesting was that it really explains why there's so much kind of contention online and why there's this like, you know, concept of cancel culture, right? I mean, we've moved away from a society that, you know, could disagree about things, right? Like if you voted for Trump and I did not, but we have a relationship, like I'm still going to rock with you. You know what I mean? Like back then, now it's like, no, I have to cancel you and I have to let you know. And you know, granted, it's good to call people out on their like crappy behavior, but we can, we've like, I don't know. It's just insanity. Like I've seen families have arguments and fights because they disagree with their, you know, perspectives or positions. And so like the having the conversations and the being able to engage in dialogue is like gone, right? It's gone. And I feel like social media was, I don't know, the false pretense was that social media was supposed to connect us. And in fact, it actually disconnected us, right? The human element, like people don't, and now with this pandemic that we're going through, it's like, we're even more glued to our phones, right?
I feel like the intent behind social media was a good intention. I feel like, but the behind Facebook, behind Instagram, behind all of these tools that came out, I think there was a lot of good intentions behind them. I think, you know, families, friends from high school, friends who haven't seen each other, friends from across the world, family from across the world can connect. Mm-hmm. And I think the intention behind these platforms was actually a good intention. But I feel like there's nefarious people out there that saw an opportunity, that saw a vulnerability and said, look, if they could, these people are connected, I could also drive thoughts. I could also drive my agenda. I could also drive different things that I want to see in society. For instance, a lot of theorists believe that the 2016 election was impacted by social media because you have, if you look at the way it's set up, to show you things that you like. So if you're constantly saying you like the Republican Party or you constantly saying you like the Democratic Party, the AI is going to bring up just those types of thoughts, just those types of things that you like, if you like a certain type of sneaker. So if you just use your feed, your news feed or your Instagram feed and think that's the world, keep in mind the algorithm is designed to give you what you like. So you're not really getting a accurate depiction of what's going on in the world because you're just seeing things that are catered to keep you engaged longer on this specific platform.
Yeah, that's so true. So it's giving everybody like different perspectives based on what they like. And it's like, it's siloing, right? So like if I'm scrolling any social media feed, I'm not going to see the same thing that you're seeing and vice versa, right? But that's what they covered, right? Like there isn't a source of truth. So how do we move away from like this fake news and like, you know, siloed thinking? And if the algorithms and the technologies are leading us down that path, so it almost feels like it's a battle and the technology's winning.
Well, like they say, sometimes the creation and the creator, we sometimes switch roles. I feel like in this instance, this is a perfect example for it. Like we as humans, we created computers or we created technology to kind of make our lives easier. And now it's kind of like a conundrum we're living in because you now have the technology kind of letting us know, kind of giving us insight on how we should live our lives. So I think what needs to happen is we need to somewhat have a reset of some sort. And it has to come individually because keep in mind one thing is that we as the users, we kind of drive this culture. And what I mean by that is that, you know, without us clicking, without there being a consumer, there really isn't, the AI doesn't really function. It doesn't function on its own. So there has to be some type of input. Now it's gathered a lot of data in the last several years. Right. However, I think what needs to happen, I think what people need to start taking seriously is that if you do have an addiction to social media, if you do have an addiction to this ease of communication that's right there at your fingertips, you have to somewhat become more aware of it. And that's what I think the mission of us discussing it. That's one of the missions we have. I think that was the overall mission of the entire documentary was just to say to people, hey, listen, you can make a difference because you're the one that gave this AI, that gave these companies that data. You could also dial back a bit. Don't take steps to not only raise awareness of your technology usage, but also understand the impact behind every click. Understand there's an impact behind every like. Understand there's an impact behind everything that you're viewing,
that's
everything
you're watching. You're addicted, right? Like that's like telling someone that's addicted to alcohol, like, oh, just understand the impact and like stop drinking. Like, I think deeper than
I'm not saying that. I'm saying, yeah, of course, I think it's deeper too. But I feel like you can't deal with, like, I get what you're saying, but I feel like you can't even deal with the problem without admitting that you have one. I'm saying start admitting that. I'm not saying try to fix it yet. That is, you're absolutely right. That is going to take a lot more. So for instance, like, we're going to use alcoholism here as an example. For a person to really think that they can deal with that addiction, or, you know, in any type of way, they first have to come to terms and admit, listen, you know, when I go out and I have a few too many, things can happen. They have to admit that to themselves first before they can start on with the healing. Like, it sometimes has to get worse before it can get better, you know? And I think we're at that point. We're at that point where it's gotten really bad, that where if we really want that younger generation to thrive and we really want to leave an impact on them, we have to start, like, taking ownership of our addiction with social media, is what I'm saying.
I find that to be super difficult and super complicated. And I think the documentary does a really great job of explaining why. It's because I think we're too deep into the rabbit hole. And, you know, I mean, you got to remember, like, a lot of the kids, a lot of the, you know, I don't know, not middle schoolers, but like teenagers, and many of these kids that were born in the 90s and 2000s, like, they don't know a world without, like, the internet, right? We grew up before the internet was, like, mainstream. So we know a world without the internet. We could literally put our phones away and for, like, an afternoon and take a walk in the park without feeling like we're going to die. Whereas a lot of the younger generation, they're so addicted, you know, their brains haven't really developed completely, right? And so, like, there's no control, right? Like, there's no control. And I highly doubt that any large technology company or small will say, oh, yeah, by the way, the technology that we created is terrible and has, you know, messed up the human race, right? It just messed up society. And so, what, you know, we made a lot of money, right? But we feel guilty. Like, and we're going to undo it. We're going to rip it apart and, you know, burn all the servers. Like, that's not, I don't think that's going to happen. And so I don't know. I don't know that we can, I think that some people can take control, but I think it's bigger than, like, one or two people or even 100 people. I think there has to be, you know, there has to be either, like, tearing it up, throwing it away, not likely. There has to be some kind of legislative reform that actually has consequences, right? Like, real consequences, and they don't back out of it. Probably not likely either, because I feel like the government has no freaking clue about any of this. As you can see by the Facebook, you know, by when Mark went to, you know, get questioned by Congress, or have, like, I don't know, these companies need to take the responsibility to really understand the negative, like, ramifications of technology and really implement, you know, tech ethics boards and stuff, right? To have oversight over this, like, damaging technology. Again, I think it's happening in certain situations, but I don't think any of these three solutions are going to be stronger than capitalism.
Agreed. I agree with that 100%. I do feel cash is king here. And in this age of content and the desire for content, they're marketing something that people want. However, I do feel that change has to start somewhere. So, like, sometimes in life, you can't control everything, but you can control your reaction to it or how you deal with it as an individual. What I'm doing, and I'll be very honest, and I've quit social media several times, right? I quit it, like, at least four times. I've gotten off of Instagram like three times. I'm completely off of Facebook. I'm not on there anymore. And I'm off of, on Twitter, I don't really, I'm on there, but I'm not really as active as I could be. So I've tried going cold turkey, and you're absolutely right. It's the hardest thing you can do, because one way or another, a friend of yours, a good classmate, someone from your past would be like, listen, man, I was looking for you on there. It's a good way for me to communicate. It makes life easier. Just everything's in one place, opposed to me having to call you, et cetera. So, but that's the first point. So it is very difficult. However, I think you could just take baby steps. For instance, disable notifications. That's one step that everyone suggested in the documentary. I thought that's a good one.
Yeah.
I also think you can, You can schedule time. Say, listen, I'll look at social media for a certain amount of time today. There's this really cool app out there. There's a really cool app out there called Moment. I don't know if you've got anyone's ever used it, but Moment I actually use. What Moment does is every day it tells me how much time I spent, how much screen time I had. It doesn't say screen time particularly on social media, but screen time in general, meaning I could be on my phone on a call. I could be on my phone doing a work situation where I'm setting up something or I'm, you know, interviewing someone, et cetera. But it, at the end of the day, it breaks down my amount of screen time. And then if I want to even delve down deeper. I'm sorry?
Is this an app for iOS or is it like what?
It's an app for iOS and for Android. It's on both platforms. It's called Moment. Mm-hmm. And it can give you a breakdown of like how much time you're on Instagram, how much time you were on, you know, Facebook, how much time you were actually on calls, how much time you were on, you know, Teams, how much time you were on Skype for Business, et cetera. So I use that as kind of like a guideline. And it tells you, like, listen, if you were on that day for a specific amount of time that's outside of your norm, say on an average, you're 5 hours a day. It will tell you like today you were on for 8 hours, which is 3 hours above your normal usage. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying quit completely because that's like you said, that's a kind of a rough ask, but I'm saying find ways to become more aware of your usage. And then you as an individual, try your best to deal with it and try to make an impact. Because at the end of the day, you know, I have two very, very young children, and for me to have them, you know, come in and just be so technologically dependent, like how most of society is, it doesn't give me much hope. So I'm trying my best to monitor my usage and actually use that time to be a parent, use that time to enjoy and show them nature, show them, let's go for a run, let's go play soccer or something. So that's what I try to do with my time. It's like the time that I'm taking away from social media and screen time, I'm trying to invest it into other types of things that I'm passionate about. So that's what I suggest as a potential solution. I'm not saying that it's going to fix everything, but I'm saying just be a little bit more aware for you and for the next generation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think from an individual level, that makes perfect sense. I do think from a societal level, though, you know, it's going to take a little bit heavier lifting, right? To, you know, to really kind of impact and try to reverse at least some of the damage.
Yeah. Well, I feel like with Mark Zuckerberg in the documentary, he referenced a reporter asked him, listen, do you feel Facebook had an effect on the 2016 election? He was like, no, I don't believe so. That's kind of a far-fetched statement because he felt that it's not, he doesn't even want to admit to the possibility because it could, he could lose ad revenue. He could actually lose dollars and investors because of that. So until these companies, I believe, have some legislation like you alluded to earlier, until Congress steps in, and I don't mean like step in and they actually form the legislation, like you said, they may have to form a committee, like an independent bipartisan committee that actually looks at these laws and they advise people who actually work in this field. There's a lot of people out there that are knowledgeable on privacy, and it has to be a diverse coalition. That's another thing. A lot of times when these legislations are passed, it's done in such a partisan way. It's done like the documentary alluded to, like it's very divided. The documentary talks about a lot of the reasons why people are divided, because these algorithms show you only people that you agree with. So I think legislation has to come from a bipartisan committee of people who are actually in tech, who actually have an open mind and want and understand that this affects not only that it may affect people of color in a completely different way too. Like we haven't even talked about that. So those types of things, I feel they need to address it from a legislative standpoint for sure. Yeah. But we need to make sure that a bipartisan and a diverse coalition is looking at this.
I don't think it should be only people in tech, because I think that's what got us here in the first place. And there was a woman, I don't recall her name right now, but she brought up a great point, right? She brought up that like a lot of times people in tech feel that tech is the problem, tech is a solution, and tech is a solution to the problem all the times. And that's not true, right? I think that we do need to expand our reach. I don't believe that technology is a solution to everything, right? I think that there are, human problems that cannot be solved by only implementing a new technological solution or writing yet another algorithm. And I think that's what got us here and will continue to push us in the wrong direction. It's just that kind of thinking from the tech community that like, oh yeah, we're smarter than anyone. We figured out, we figured out humans. And so we can fix everything, right? I think we need to really like think about that a little bit deeper.
You make a good point. Ironically, I was on the web the other day and I saw a post, and it was an interesting post. It referenced that, companies invest in firewalls, they invest in IDS, IPS, they invest in all these systems, but the weakest link within that chain is humans, and I found it kind of ironic because it almost made it seem, and you hear that a lot, like on a lot of certification exams too, they always talk about that. What is the number one vulnerability in the environment? And it's always humans, and that's always being brought up. I feel like that kind of sets the table for stuff like this to happen, to where the AI can take advantage of humans. And I feel like, I think we as a culture, tech culture, needs to stop doing that. We can allude that, yeah, there is vulnerabilities there, but the human experience needs to be valued. Human life needs to be valued. And we have to start building that culture up and giving humans like their due credit. Like, they're the ones that built these machines. They're the ones that developed these programs. They're the ones that are coming up with these ideas and being innovative. And they're empowering these computers. So to give the computer and to give the technology more respect or more dignity than you're giving human beings, just in the name of capitalism, in the name of money, I think that mindset needs to shift. Like when we're talking about getting to the deeper root cause of a lot of these things, I think that's one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that humans are our greatest strength, right? Like, we make the world go round. And, as information security professionals, we have a duty to empower and protect, right? And so I think that generalization of saying, humans are our weakest link, and, these dumb humans are these dumb users, really zaps like that motivation for humans, for just people wanting to learn and really do the right thing. I think at the end of the day, people really do want to do the right thing. So I'm more, I'm a proponent of, hey, let's teach people how to fish, right? And let's do better together, right? Because that's how you can scale your impact versus trying to isolate and say, I've implemented all these technological solutions, but I can't solve the human problem, right? I think that's like the first mistake that we make. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and share. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, among others. Follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Colors of InfoSec. Thanks for listening.